that water?
It's not vodka, and it's not gin, and it's water.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you to the crew of Encourage and Courage for all the hard work and dedication in putting this conference together and what you do every day for this ministries. If I may speak for all the attendees, we know it is a labor of love for you. So let's hear it for the staff, the board, and the chaplains of Encourage. What a great weekend. This has been a time of casting off our facades and going deep with our emotions, our fears, and our worries. It is heavy, but heavy in the best way, in concentrated prayer with our Lord and with the support of all of these wonderful people around you that you see. It's a time of learning, of inspiration, and of uplift. Thank you for being here. I especially thank all those Courage members who are here. You are our heroes. And thank you, Holy Spirit. As I always say, there are no strangers in Encourage and Courage, only fast friends. So it is good to be home. I'm here because of the pain and suffering I have felt for not being able to give my approval to my daughter's same-sex relationship. Great pain and great suffering. Regular participation in Encourage meetings has given me the opportunity to share my thoughts and advice to others in the same boat, and has led me and three other Encourage members to begin writing a handbook for us. You'll begin to see individual chapters rolled out in the newsletter very soon. So here is my story. It began about 12 years ago when I received a letter from my daughter coming out to me. She was living with us at the time, having recently graduated from college. She left it so I would find it on the way to my car as I prepared to drive to work. I was alone when I read it. I'm so glad she did not tell me in a conversation. I might have blown up, shouted, or who knows what. It was a beautifully written letter, tender and with love for me. Nonetheless, the news it held was a huge shock. It felt like a punch right in the gut. I trembled. I was in disbelief. Yet there it was, reality. My mind swirled and wandered with thoughts, questions, and confusions. Intense prayer quickly followed. I didn't know what to say, think, or do. I was lost. Needless to say, I didn't get much work done that day. I desperately needed to talk to someone to seek guidance before I came home. It couldn't be my wife. I knew she was on the other side of this. I felt too embarrassed to talk to close friends. Somewhere in my brain, I remembered an EWTN show with Father Groeschel that mentioned there was some Catholic group for people like me. A short amount of Googling later, and I found the Encourage website. I called the headquarters and said I needed to speak to a priest. The woman who answered said there was no one available, but she would have someone call me. I explained that I was in agony and that I must speak to someone right away. She put me on hold, and none other than Father Scalia came on the phone to speak with me. Father was wonderful. His calm bedside manner made me feel comfortable. He set my expectations. Occasionally, young people change their mind, but usually not. He told me I needed to prepare for a long haul. He also gave me this great advice. The first time you talk to your daughter, just listen. Don't rebut, don't engage in a debate. That can come later. As a lawyer and a lobbyist, that was hard to do. I wanted to engage, but didn't. Father said to just listen, ask questions, learn about why she made this decision. Be calm and tell her you love her. That's exactly what I did. Our talk went very well. Our deep hug at the end of it put us both much more at ease. I then found my local Encourage chapter and talked to the lay leader. He was very reassuring. He told me the next meeting was in a week and a half. That meant another 10 days or so of torment, pent-up worry, sleeplessness, that churning stomach, so many questions. I needed to unload to someone, and I needed answers about what to do. On the evening of my first meeting, the first of several God winks occurred. A God wink is when you get an unmistakable sign from God that can't be explained by mere coincidence. These gifts have been sent to me many times, but only when I'm really dialed in with the Lord and end up experiencing an intense prayer life. As I pulled into the parking lot to attend that meeting, I was listening to a podcast, and as my finger moved towards the iPhone to put that show on pause before turning off the engine, just then the host of the show said, "We need to encourage our children." That shook me in the best way. I knew that I was going to find a place of support and peace and encourage. The gang welcomed me with open arms. I felt so much better after that first meeting and repeatedly sought and received great guidance from them in the many monthly meetings to follow. We became good friends, too. After getting my arms around the church's position on same-sex attraction, just the basics at this point, I did engage my daughter about her decision. This was in exchange for her trying to convince me to give my approval, which I thought was a fair deal. We did this a couple of times. I pursued my hope that I could talk her out of her decision. That was a naive hope, since that almost never works. Our discussions were calm and respectful until the end, when she grew a bit agitated. So I dropped doing this, realizing that I had reached the point of diminishing returns. We agreed to disagree and left it at that. There was tension in our relationship, but we got along. That was easy to do because her partner lived far away in another state, so I didn't have to face seeing her. I had met her once before at a family reunion on my wife's side of the family that was near where the partner lived. The relationship had been going on for over a year. So my daughter invited her to join us, which she did. The three of us went out for a drink. My daughter was giving me a test. We got along fine, but I didn't know of their relationship. Anyway, soon after coming out to me, my daughter got a job offer close to where her partner lived. So she moved away and they became roommates. I was thinking this would probably deepen their relationship, which it did. Maybe it would have otherwise blown over, as many long-distance relationships do. At the same time, it was a relief for me because I didn't have to be reminded of the issue every time I saw my daughter at the house. Another family reunion followed a few months later, with the partner attending. Everyone who was there, roughly 25 people, now knew about their relationship. I was the only one who did not approve. Everyone knew I didn't approve, but that wasn't a problem because they kept their distance about this topic. I followed a very simple and effective strategy to deal with the partner, a stupid strategy. I gave her a perfunctory but cordial hello and then shunned her for the rest of the weekend, barely speaking to her. That was easy to do since there were so many other people to talk to. At the end of the weekend, my daughter, who is very even-tempered by nature, blew up at me, the first time I had seen her blow up at anyone. In tears, she called me out for shunning. I instantly recognized that what I had done was wrong. I didn't do it to be mean, I was just acting cowardly. I confessed, apologized, said I was sorry, and promised that it would never happen again. She gave me that "I'll believe it when I see it" look, and that was that. I was totally convicted to change, though. This is when I found my first self-taught lesson. Your love for your child, a very deep love, will enable, no, compel you to do things you never thought you could do. I always told myself I would take a bullet for my kids if I had to. Well, no one was trying to kill me, but I knew that overcoming that shunning would be extremely hard for me. It turned out to be the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. But I knew I would do it because it would be done out of love for my daughter. You sacrifice for your kids out of love. I had greatly hurt her by not giving my approval. You sacrifice greatly out of love for your children. The least I could do after hurting her was to man up and be kind, which would not require me to compromise my moral beliefs. The first opportunity came a few months later when she and the partner came home for a weekend visit. Now there would just be the four of us in the house, no place to hide. Encouraged helped me again. The strong advice I received was to treat the partner just as I would any other friend of my daughter, leaving sexuality out of the equation. There are four lessons I learned from this. One, acceptance of the reality of your child's choice does not mean approval if you are already on record as not approving. Two, being nice to the partner does not mean approval. Three, Jesus modeled how to act when he met with the prostitutes and loan sharks, tax collectors. He engaged them on friendly terms. This gave him standing so he could have an impact on them. 4, this is really hard. It is tough. Do it anyway. Don't rationalize. Do what you're supposed to do. This is not about you. It is about your love for your loved one. I prepared through intense prayer and steeled myself. I was bound and determined to be Mr. Nice, be welcoming to the partner, telling jokes, and having a smile on my face. The ultimate fake until you make it exercise. I did it, but it was torture. I kept looking at the clock, just another 10 minutes, then 10 minutes more. Soon it will be an hour, then I can try to make it through the next hour, and so on. I found myself taking bogus bathroom breaks just so I could breathe a little bit. Halfway through Saturday morning, they announced that they were going to see a friend for lunch. Ah, relief. I could relax. I had a reprieve for a couple of hours. The end of the night, I was utterly exhausted. Now I know how world-class chess players feel after a match. They're just sitting there for 3 hours. How hard could that be, you might think? Well, very hard, because expending great mental energy is physically exhausting. In the end, I pulled it off. I was perfect. Again, deep love for your child will enable you to do things you never thought you could do. This exercise repeated itself through a couple more visits. Each time it got easier. On one visit, I took the partner out for a one-on-one lunch to apologize for the shunning. We weren't chummy, but we got along. She appreciated the gesture, and my daughter was very thankful. Eventually, my daughter announced that she was in love with her partner. Another blow. And then another moment of cowardice. I should have said right then and there, I should have said much earlier, just know that if you ever decide to get married, I won't be able to go to the wedding. As much as I love you, that would be against my religion and my conscience. God comes first, even before family. It would have been so much easier to have laid down that marker at that point, a calmer point in time when a future wedding, let alone falling in love, was just theoretical. So the inevitable happened, the engagement announcement. I said I couldn't go. She was shocked, blew up, could not process that, and demanded that I go. I said, I'll do this much. I will tear down my religious and moral beliefs to the core, challenge every assumption, and then see if I can build it back up from scratch. If I can't and can find any moral justification for going, I will. I'll talk to both sides, read up on both sides, read anything you want me to, and talk to anyone you want me to. I'll do this up to the day before the wedding, holding out hope that if I find a way to go, hoping that I will do so, but only if it is morally justified. We left it at that. A short time later, I got an email from her now fiancé. It was the nastiest, meanest, most hateful communication I have ever received. Reading it was a horrible experience. The next day, I called my daughter and said, look, I'm engaging in a good faith effort here to try to attend your wedding. That email was not helpful. To my surprise, she said she was aware of the email and that this was the toned down version. So that is what I was up against with the fiancé. My worry over my daughter's wedding was different than all the other crises I had faced in my life. The death of my mother, then the death of my father, getting fired because a new boss was evil and unethical, etc., etc. In all those cases, I knew what to do, pray hard, suffer in the moment, then pick myself back up, and so forth. For this one, though, after praying hard, I didn't know what was right and what was wrong, go to the wedding or not. That was a very unsettling feeling. But I also knew that not just continued prayer, but study, and lots of it, was the way to discern. This was the second self-taught lesson. Discernment goes way beyond, well, I just pray about and say a novena. Do that, but do much more. Study. Talk to both sides. When the other side comes up with a point you can't answer or don't know how to answer, raise it in an encourage meeting, get an answer, and then get back to the person who said it to you. So many times I see great prayer and love of our Lord from encourage members, but no steps or just little steps beyond that, particularly in doing what is hard, talking to your child. Timidity rules. That only causes more problems, as I painfully learned by not putting down that marker early about the wedding. So talk to your loved ones. Here's a question. Find out if they're in a relationship. Well, that's a pretty important thing to know. There's three possibilities. No, I'm not. Well, that leads to maybe, perhaps they're rethinking their sexuality. Or it could be yes. Well, that might mean, is it serious? Is there a wedding in the offing? Or it could be they just broke up. That's the golden moment. Because now they maybe will rethink a whole bunch of stuff, including their sexuality. Here's another question. Have you ever been abused? You hear these stories, and I never heard of anything from you, but were you ever? Can you imagine if that child had bottled all that up for years and years and you didn't know about it? So that's why you have to ask, you have to learn. Then you know how to approach once you decide, once you understand where they're coming from, what their situation is. So my discernment began 300 to 400 hours of prayer, study, and dialogue with both sides. I went to a PFLAG meeting with my daughter, which is a gay-affirming support group. I found a gay Catholic law professor and calmly explored catechism with him a half dozen times. I found a great book, When Homosexuality Hits Home, by Joe Dallas. I highly recommend it. During this time, I experienced my second God wink. I was watching the EWTN show Super Saints. Bob and Penny Lord, the hosts, were visiting the shrine of St. John Newman in Philadelphia. They didn't say it once, they said it three times. If you're ever in Philadelphia, you have to go to the shrine. Well, I had a weekend trip to Philadelphia planned for the very next week. I thought, okay, I get it. I guess I have to go to the shrine. I drove down with a buddy who was a weak believer. I said, look, I know this sounds crazy, but God is calling me to visit a shrine when I'm in town. He accommodated me and waited in the car as I went in. Now, this was really cool. I knew I had been called, but I didn't know what I would find. Turning around every corner was an adventure. What would I find? Would this be it? But nothing. Feeling dejected, I was on my way out when I saw the bookstore. I asked if they had anything in writing about St. John Newman. They gave me a pamphlet, and there was my answer. It said he had popularized the 40 hours of devotion. That was it. Lent was coming up, and I was betting that there was at least one church in my diocese that would hold this. I found two, so I went to them both on back-to-back weekends. I didn't go 40 hours straight without sleep. I went during all my waking hours apart from eating. It was a great experience. I felt exhausted at the end because of the mental energy expended. But it was a good exhaustion because I was making progress. Throughout my discernment, I took on all comers. The last 2 weeks before the wedding, this continued almost nonstop and included my daughter, my wife, my sons, my brother, my sister, my father-in-law, my mother-in-law, a sister-in-law, the maid of honor, and several family friends. While I was 99.5% convinced that there was no moral way for me to go to the wedding at this point, I still searched. All that study paid off. I'd essentially created my own graduate course in Catholic apologetics about same-sex marriage. That meant I had answers when I was challenged. I had answers for every single objection. By that point, every one. This showed everyone who disagreed with me that my decision was based on moral conviction, not prejudiced. I had talked the talk, then walked the walk. You will be challenged by your loved one and others about not approving of your loved one's same-sex relationship. You have to study and be prepared. Encourage the Joe Dallas book and the handbook I'm helping to write will help you a lot. What I would say to people is, look, the score is 8-0. There are 8 explicit condemnations of homosexuality and lesbianism in the Old Testament and the New, and the number of passages that affirm it are 0. So that tells me pretty clearly this is wrong, as backed up by the Catechism and the traditions of the Church. Also, God comes before family. That's right in the first commandment. Put no false gods before me. It's not just some golden calf at the bottom of the mountain. It could be yourself thinking that you're God. It could be work. It could be your family. So that's how I explained it. And then when I was challenged, I wish I had thought of this at the time, but it did come to me later. Just take their virtues of diversity, equity, and inclusion and apply them. Now, these are not Christian virtues, but they can be very good virtues in the right context. And this is a good context. Diversity has been woven into the very fabric of our country as a virtue to aspire to since 1782, when E Pluribus Unum became the motto of the United States. Translated from Latin, it means out of many, one. Back then, there was massive diversity of country of origin, race, and religion. Now there is diversity of sexual orientation as well. Let's respect that diversity, even if we disagree. Equity is where the diversity rubber meets the road. Treat those who disagree with you fairly and equally with those who agree with you. So please treat me as fairly and equally as you would with any other heterosexual. Inclusion. This naturally leads to inclusion, that you and I feel welcome and included more than anyone else because we're part of the same family. We should be practicing inclusion more than anybody. So that's what I say now. So getting back to we are facing this moral decline of our country. You and I, all of us here, we're on the tip of the spear. We're the ones that have to defend the faith and stand up for it. So hold the line on that. This isn't just about apologetics, though. You must display moral courage. Talk to your loved one about the hard issue. Yet again, I say, deep love for your child will enable you to do things you never thought you could do. Overcome timidity for him or her. Sacrifice your reticence for him or her. There is great inspiration for moral courage almost everywhere you turn in the Catholic faith. Jesus on the cross, the apostles, the martyrs. It goes on and on. Draw strength from them. Pray for moral courage. Confess in the confessional when you did not display it. One of the most common sins we commit is the sin of omission. Back to my journey. The week of the wedding, I received the third God wink, the most unmistakable one I'd ever received up to that point. I spend an evening shift in Eucharistic adoration every Wednesday night. The Wednesday afternoon before the Saturday wedding, I couldn't wait for my shift. My stomach was in knots, and I had to get to adoration. So I went to the adoration chapel, said the rosary, and prayed. As I left the chapel, I spotted an encouraged member in the church. I never go to church in the middle of the afternoon. She doesn't either. In fact, it wasn't even her church. So we spoke for about 10 minutes. She was calming and reassuring me. I felt better. Coincidence? The next afternoon, more stomach knots, another trip to the chapel for rosary and prayer. As I left the chapel, the same thing happened. There she was again. I thought, okay, God, I get it. You had to hit me over the head with a 2x4, but I get it now. So I call her my angel. We often think of the pain we are causing our child, but rarely, if we ever think, about the flip side of the coin. We are pleasing God by doing the right thing. This God wink was his thank you. My doubts and my worries went away after that. I have never second-guessed my decision since then. Then I had my final exam. The day before the wedding, I met with a laicized gay priest who was to marry my daughter. I had a 2.5-hour lunch with him, still hoping I might find some moral justification for going. I didn't. I went toe-to-toe, civilly, with a man who had been through seminary, who knew the church's teaching in depth, and had found a way to justify his moral choice in his own mind. I answered every objection he had. I told him my reasoning, and he had no rebuttal. In fact, he even confessed to me that sometimes he has a dark night of the soul for the choices he made. The night before the wedding was a very sad time for me. My daughter, her fiancé, and my family left the house to spend the night in a hotel near the wedding venue. I did not want to be alone. I had dinner with my closest faithful Catholic friend. That helped a lot. I told my daughter that if she wanted to, I would meet her before her wedding and tell her all the things I would have said under different circumstances. She took me up on that. I met her alone in her hotel room. I told her how beautiful she looked in her wedding gown. I not only told her that I loved her, but was specific as to why I loved her, telling all the things I admired about her. I broke down crying and choked up. That was really helpful for her to see. It wasn't just words of love, Dad was saying. It was the emotion of love. I also had the trifecta of sacraments that day. I served Mass in the morning and had communion. I went to confession. I went to Mass again in the evening and had communion one more time. You were allowed to receive it twice in one day. By coincidence, maybe, our bishop said the Mass. I met with him afterwards, told him what was happening, and he gave me a blessing. Two encouraged couples came with me to that Mass, and we went out for dinner afterwards. It was a relaxing, fun time with me feeling a very strong pull of moral support. I joked that I hoped I might choke on my food so that I could receive the last rites. Then I would receive the quinella of sacraments all in one day. I had behaved perfectly since the time I was said I would no longer shun, which was by then about 2 years earlier. I never slipped. Now, there is no way I could have done this without praying to the Holy Spirit for strength and receiving that grace, and without a deep love for my daughter that motivated me. It is easy to love when it is easy. When it is hard, it is deeply hard to love in the right way. And there is no deeper love than tough love. I was tough on myself, forcing myself to do things I initially hated doing by being nice around the partner. I was tough on my daughter by not going to the wedding. Being tough on myself paid off the morning after the wedding. I came to a brunch with the immediate family. At the end, my new daughter-in-law hugged me and said, "I knew you'd do the best you could." This, the same one who sent me that horrible email, those words meant the world to me. She had come a long way. Even she had been convinced that, quote, "I made the wrong decision for the right reason, that I have this crazy view of morality that makes no sense to her, but at least I did it for the right reason, love of God." I came to the following conclusions. As much as your love for your child will enable you to do things you thought you never thought you could do, your love for God is even stronger, or at least it should be, and that will enable you to do things for him you never thought you could do. Also, make no mistake, God comes before land family. As I said, it's right in the first commandment. There's no loophole for obey unless it's hard. My son said to me quite strongly before the wedding, "Dad, if you don't go, you will lose her." I was willing to. There is no, "This will hurt my child. God wouldn't want me to do that." And fortunately for us, there is this passage from the Gospel according to Matthew. "Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take up his cross and follow me is not worthy of me." Every passage in the Bible is there for a reason. This passage is there for the very situation I faced. God comes before family, even when it is hard, even when it will cost you. All the martyrs understood that. Most in modern America have lost this fidelity. There is no God calls us to love and support one another and not hurt your own loved one. But love does not mean approve of whatever they do. It does not mean as long as you're happy. We are not called to be permissive parents. That has always been true. From go to sleep at your bedtime to look both ways before you cross the street to you can borrow the car keys but be home by curfew. It's the same issue here, only much more significant. Now they are old enough to make their own choices, but you are still called to support them in all things except him, sin. You hurt, not help your loved one by supporting sin. There is no, "This doesn't make sense to me." It is a commandment, not a recommendation. "Thy will be done," as the Our Father says, not your will. Prudential judgment is not what you think is right and wrong. It is discernment of whether a given situation is right or wrong according to his definition of morality, not yours. Back to my story. After the wedding, I realized that I had another gift from God, a frozen shoulder. Over the preceding months, my body had become so tense that my shoulder seized up. I couldn't lift my arm above my shoulder. The doctor and physical therapist told me it was the result of stress. There was no pill or surgery to correct it. It had to be stretched out a tiny bit at a time. Stretch until you can't stand the pain. Rest, do that 9 more times, then 10 more times each in several different positions. Do that 3 times a week for several months. Each time, mobility will increase just a little bit more. I never got frustrated, angry, or resentful of the pain. In fact, I embraced the suffering. It was my chance to unite my suffering to our Lord's on the cross. He did that for me. I did this for him. He showed me the way. I did it his way. I also united my suffering to my daughter's. Though we suffered in different ways, it helped me empathize. My relationship with my daughter was strained for the first year of her marriage. There were no visits. We only spoke on the phone about 3 or 4 times. Her tone was cordial, but there was residual anger in it. This hurt both of us because we missed each other. We had a great relationship before the whole thing started. In the 3 years that followed, there were at least 2 visits a year with my daughter and her spouse. Each time, the interactions got easier. It got to the point where I was nervous before the meeting, but then everything went fine. It eventually got to the point where there was actually easy camaraderie. We laughed, cracked jokes, and had fun. No tension. The 3 of us had come a long way. There was a setback. My wife received word from our daughter that they wanted to schedule a Zoom chat. We also received a package from them instructing us not to open it until the Zoom. I strongly suspected that this was a pregnancy announcement. I knew that the spouse was trying to get pregnant through a sperm donor. I had time to pray and think what to do. Like the wedding, I could not give my approval because of the way the child was conceived. After the birth, though, none of that would matter. Love the grandchild. It was indeed a pregnancy announcement. The package contained grandma and grandpa coffee mugs, which we opened on the Zoom. My wife was thrilled. I expressed great excitement of the birth of the child, but pointedly did not say congratulations. That did not go unnoticed. I received an angry phone call from my daughter the next day, calling me out. I explained my morality about the sperm donation. She thought that was ridiculous. A short time later, the spouse had a miscarriage. Relations between my daughter and me cooled for about 6 months. Later, my wife received word from my daughter that she had looked at her spouse's laptop in suspicion and then found proof that she had been cheating on her. The spouse admitted it. My daughter spent the night in the hotel and flew home the next day to be with mom and dad. She spent 2 weeks with us to figure out what to do next. She was basically functionally comatose, just in a daze. All the lows we had been through before were then set aside. I was there as dad to comfort my daughter in her grief, and she was there to receive her dad's love. She decided on divorce. My wife flew back with her for moral support. The divorce occurred. Then she packed all her belongings in her car and drove home with my wife. My daughter was much better when she arrived, still very sad, but no longer comatose. Time passed, and she felt a little better each month. We drew closer, not like it was in the old days, but pretty close. Then she announced that she had made a decision about how to move on with her life, move far away to attend grad school, to a city with a built-in support network, because that's where her best friend, her brother, and another friend lived. So she moved in with her best friend's mother, who lived alone and welcomed the company, especially since COVID was raging. Her best friend and her brother would visit their mom frequently. A daughter got to know the brother. They developed a friendship and then a dating relationship. When my daughter called me to announce that she had started to date him, I could tell there was a little worry in her voice about me reacting with some kind of, well, it's about time type of comment. Instead, I said, oh yeah, I remember him, great guy. He said, you remember him? When did you ever meet him? I said, don't you remember? We had his family over at our house about 20 years ago for Easter dinner. She hadn't. I said, I sat right next to him. He was about 21 years old at the time. I pumped him with questions about what he was going to do with his life and mentored him. I was very impressed and told him, you have a great future ahead of you. Here's my card. You call me anytime if you want advice or help. I'm on your team. So the Holy Spirit motivated me to help a young man 20 years ago. In doing so, he planted a seed that bloomed all those years later. Their relationship blossomed, and lo and behold, they were married in May. I received yet another God wink the Sunday before the wedding. Just as I began to pray for them at Mass, I heard something played on the organ that I had never heard in our church before, Pachelbel's Canon. That was played at our wedding. Thank you, Lord. I took on a lot of wedding duties the week of the wedding. It was ultra stressful. I put stress on myself because since I missed the first one, I wanted this one to be perfect. It was, but I paid the price. My body basically shut down an hour before the reception ended, and when I got to the hotel room, I got the chills. I took a hot shower for 25 minutes to raise my body temperature and was totally wiped out the next day. As we were filing, did I miss a page here? Hold on a second. Yeah. The chills were induced by self-imposed stress. As I lay in bed most of the next day, I felt strangely happy, not just because of the wedding, because I suffered one more time for my daughter, just like that frozen shoulder, motivated by love of her. At my wedding speech, I said, "We banked a lot of love over many years to be tapped into when needed. We knew that our love for each other was stronger than anything that divided us." Indeed, that was true. There are two footnotes to this story. I did something I should have done much earlier. About 4 years after her first marriage and before the second one, I called her and said, "You know, I haven't talked to you about the wedding since it happened, the first one. I'm sure you have residual hurt, maybe residual anger too at me and other emotions. I just wanted to call and see how you're doing." She said, "Yes, it does hurt a bit," and she has been reminded of it every time she went to a wedding and saw a dad walk his daughter down the aisle. But she thanked me profusely for calling, because it showed that I cared about her feelings and that I loved her. I didn't apologize for not going, because I didn't do anything wrong. She didn't ask for an apology. She was just so glad and relieved that we both survived it. That was a healing moment for both of us. Here's one more story to share. 6 years ago, I attended my first annual Courage and Courage conference. I went to the session for Courage Women to meet with Courage members. I was having a hard time processing it. What had going on? I was really in the throes of agony. My face showed it. As we were filing out of the room, one of the women motioned for me to come over. In a pure act of compassion, she starts giving me a pep talk. Now, I'm an old guy. No one gives me pep talks. I'm the one giving pep talks, not receiving them. It was a great act of kindness, and I'm thinking to myself, "Boy, this is great. I'm getting a pep talk." One of the things she said was, "I'm going to pray for your daughter, and you know, she's going to come around one of these days. And when she does, who's she going to talk to? It won't be her mother, who supported her, whatever the choices she made. She'll come to you, because you were the one who gave her advice based on what you thought was best for her, regardless of whether she would agree or not." I thought, well, that will never happen, but thanked her. Yet that did happen. I've talked to my daughter about her relationship with her boyfriend, then fiancé, and now husband. She welcomes my advice and asks me questions. Then I fill in my wife and tell her how they're doing. That woman is here today. Her name is Barb. Barb, please stand. We want to give you some applause. For those of you who don't know Barb, please see her during the social. She is a remarkable woman. And there's one more remarkable woman here. It's one of my co-authors, the great Peggy. Peggy, please stand. Where are you? There she is. There she is. Peggy has a charism of explaining the Lord's love and his compassion for us more than anyone I've ever known, and I've learned a great deal from her. So that's my story. I've grown in two important ways. I developed moral courage through this all, something that has benefited me many times when I've had to show it in other situations. I also grew much closer to the Lord. My faith deepened. Again, this has helped me many times. There have also been three lasting effects. The first is worry. Encourage members thinks I have graduated or something and wonder why I keep coming to meetings. You see, my daughter did not give up same-sex attraction because of a change in her moral convictions. She simply fell in love again, and that person she fell in love with happened to be a guy. As such, he has not changed her mind. So I still pray for mercy and salvation for her. I'm still on my journey. I still need this. I worry, but put worry in its place. If you let it overwhelm you, it will. Second is hurt. The hurt that I caused my daughter in not going to the wedding continues to pain me, less so over time, but it does. Helping other encouraging members helped me to heal me. The third is peace of mind. I know I did the right thing. If I didn't, I would feel guilt. I'll take a lifelong peace of mind and diminishing hurt over a lifetime of guilt anytime. Among other themes, my story shows the power of encourage, which has been there and come through for me so many, many times. So I'm glad you are here. We are all here for each other. If you are not a regular, I hope you become one. There is great value in doing so. Discernment takes time. It takes time to sink in. It is a journey. If you do not have a chapter near you, join by Zoom. Our diocese meets twice a month in person and by Zoom, and all are welcome. Please see me if you would like to take part. Here's one last thought. I probably won't see most of you again before I die. The Lord grants me a ticket to heaven. I look forward to seeing you there at our reunion. Hugs all around.